What if the best way forward is to make sure you can't go backward? That's the central premise of Matt Higgins' book, Burn the Boats, a 7-day challenge to unleash your potential. Matt is an angel investor, an executive fellow at Harvard Business School, and a guest shark on Shark Tank. And in his new book, he offers up a counterintuitive success formula that's long been practiced by military leaders and entrepreneurs alike. Here's Matt to share 5 of his big ideas.
Hi, I'm Matt Higgins, author of Burn the Boats. I'm also an executive fellow and teacher at Harvard Business School, where I teach the course Moving Beyond Direct-to-Consumer. And I'm co-founder and CEO of RSE Ventures. We're an investment firm that focuses on great consumer brands like Magnolia Bakery and Milk Bar and many others that you may have heard of. I want to talk to you today about my book, Burn the Boats, and some of the insights that I believe are most important. Let's start with the title of the book. Why is it called Burn the Boats? Insight number 1. Humans perform better without a safety net and no plan B. This idea of burn the boats and this wording has come up and resurfaced throughout recorded history. You can go back to Sun Tzu in The Art of War, or Caesar, or the ancient Israelites, or Cortez in 1519. No matter what language, no matter what culture, and no matter what century, there's always a fable around a military leader who found themselves outnumbered 100-1. And on the precipice of disaster and losing everything, they always make one critical move, and that is to literally burn their boats, eliminate any possibility of retreat, or as Sun Tzu would say, destroy the cooking pots, and eliminate any hankering after home. So why is it that military strategists intuitively understand something that most of us reject, that when you have a backup plan, that when you have an alternative way to achieve your dreams, you're actually much less likely to do so? Why do we reject that idea? So I thought maybe it doesn't apply anymore. Maybe it's an outdated notion. But when you survey the literature and you survey science and you interview 50 different celebrity CEOs, founders, athletes, and entrepreneurs, what I found is, in fact, there was a moment when they had to decide to go all in and lean into their full potential. There was a study in 2014 at a Wharton where they tried to actually assess what is the impact of merely contemplating Plan B, not actually doing anything about it. And they had 2 sets of students, and one group of students was allowed to simply think about an alternative way to get what they wanted and complete the assignment. And they had 2 interesting findings. One, not only were the students who contemplated an alternative, a plan B, in order to achieve the result, much less likely to be successful, they also were much less interested. The mere contemplation of a plan B, just thinking about it, makes it much less likely that you'll ever achieve plan A. And so this idea of burn the boats that works so well when you're outnumbered in the year 700, turns out it works quite well in peacetime too. The single greatest source of arbitrage in life or in business is self-awareness, and self-awareness can be cultivated. The Italians have an amazing phrase, which I am not going to butcher by saying it in Italian, but it essentially goes like this: the fish rots from the head. What that basically means, metaphorically speaking, is that in any organization, whatever dysfunction is being perpetuated, you could usually trace it back to the source of leadership. Whoever is the person or people in charge, whatever's wrong at the top cascades downstream and shows up at every level of the organization. The same could be said for human beings, right? When our body is struggling or we have ailments, a lot of times it's because we are not in a good place mentally. So, number one, when you're looking for upside, we tend to go to Barnes & Noble and look for books. We tend to seek out a mentor. We go on the internet and watch TED Talks. But we bypass the most important and obvious step, which is entirely your control, is to audit how you think, how you approach problems. And so if you want to have breakout success, and if you want to get unstuck, the first place to start is cultivating self-awareness. When I've interacted with CEOs and leaders of organizations, and I find that they under-index for self-awareness, usually the number one reason, it's usually because of some unreconciled vulnerability in the past that makes them afraid to look within. And therefore, they direct all their energy externally and honestly don't want the scrutiny. But without scrutiny, without curiosity about one's own fallibility, you can't have breakthrough success. So how do you cultivate self-awareness? The first step is shedding shame. Look at any legacy items that go back in time, have been unreconciled, any baggage you're carrying that makes you feel ugly, that makes you feel ashamed, and attack it. A lot of these issues do stem from childhood. It's why the cover of my book is actually meant to be a paper boat that floats in a bathtub, because those are the first metaphorical boats that we need to burn. But we all have our respective issues that become sources of shame. But I find the number one impediment to cultivating self-awareness is unreconciled sources of shame, vulnerability, and insecurity. And the way to not only address that within yourself, but within an organization, is to model the act of shedding shame by being open and transparent about those vulnerabilities. There is nothing to be ashamed of in this world. And everyone has their issues, but also we're all too busy to care about yours. And so if you really want to unlock and cultivate self-awareness, first start by shedding shame and accept the fact that the fish rots from the head. If you're the leader of an organization and you don't address those issues, I guarantee you they are going to show up downstream in ways you will not be able to recognize, because you have not cultivated your own self-awareness. If you want to launch a business, you don't need an invention. You don't need a revolution. You simply need a proprietary insight all your own. If you think about some of the greatest companies built over the last 30 years, companies that you've come to love like Airbnb, or companies that you can't live without like Uber, and you ask yourself, what was the invention? You won't find any. What you will find, though, is what I call a proprietary insight. A proprietary insight is an insight all your own that you glean from sitting in the stream of data, from your personal experience, from something that only you see and have the courage to act on. Think about Airbnb and Brian Chesky, one of the founders. His insight when he was sleeping on a futon in his friend's house was that, you know, maybe other people would want to rent out a room, and rather than rent a hotel room or rent an entire apartment. And you know, that little insight that made sense to him ended up creating a $100 billion company. The same could be said of Uber. Shouldn't it be easier to order a car? And so all of us, I argue, have proprietary insights that pass through our hands every single day by virtue of the jobs we do, by virtue of the neighborhood we live in, by virtue of the family that we're born into. We see things about the world that could be different, should be done better, if only someone would take the step of creating that business. What I argue is that you need to lower the bar for taking action if you want to create your own business. We are blinded sometimes by watching Shark Tank, which we all love, and I had the pleasure of serving on as a guest shark for 2 seasons. But in some respects, Shark Tank is perpetuating a myth, because every business that comes through that show is usually founded upon an invention. And the reason why is it's easier to understand, it's easier to fund, it's sort of the American dream. But the reality is the vast, vast majority of businesses were born upon an insight about how things could be done differently, about how they could be done better. And they're not an invention at all. And when you look at the founder journey and you read into it, you'll always be able to identify the intersection between their experience, their life, their passion, and that proprietary insight that they were able to identify. Now, lots of other people would probably be able to have identified that same thing, right? We've all slept on a futon, but not everybody creates Airbnb. And that's the difference about being a founder. Do you have the courage and conviction to take that proprietary insight and bring it to life? But it all starts with that simple proprietary insight of how the world can be different, how the world can be better. If you want to change the world with a really big idea, start by making a gut sandwich. What do I mean by gut sandwich? When I interact with entrepreneurs, the journey usually goes something like this. They have an epiphany at 3 a.m. that they just can't stop thinking about. And when they wake up in the morning, they reach out to the people in their circle, those who I call agendaless supporters, who are pragmatic optimists. Those are people who, number one, have your best interests at heart because they love you. Two, they are wired to be optimistic, to believe both anything is possible, and two, that you can do anything, but they're not delusional. And so that's the first attempt to seek some type of qualitative affirmation for a seed of an idea. Then the second step is a sliding doors moment for most entrepreneurs. That's where data comes in. They'll seek any amount of data out there in the universe to support whether there's product market fit, whether the TAM is large enough, the total addressable market, whether enough people were willing to pay enough to make it worth it to spend 5 years bringing this idea to life. Whatever the data is out there to support this. Here's the challenge. The degree to which an idea is truly revolutionary has an inverse relationship with the amount of data there will be to support it. And that's because opportunity arrives before the tipping point of evidence. If an idea is truly game-changing, of course, there's not going to be much data out there to support it. And if there was, there'd already be 100 people pursuing the exact same thing. And so when you look back and you reconstruct groundbreaking ideas in retrospect, like the iPod, for example, we tend to construct the data in reverse. We rearrange the order of what was available at the moment of time at the inception of this big idea to conclude that the data was all pointing in the same direction. But when Steve Jobs reached into his front pocket and pulled out an iPod, he did it because he wanted to carry his U2 collection with him at all times. It's not because the data said that there was this massive market for the iPod. And his intuition told him that there were millions and millions of other people that once they were presented with that glorious solution, they'd want to carry their music in their pocket too. And so the best ideas in reality are gut sandwiches. They begin with intuition. They're sandwiched with a bit of data, whatever's available, whatever you can get your hands on, but they end with intuition. If you want data to give you the green light, most often you're going to get stopped in your tracks. The principle of compounding applies just as much to your career and your personal life as it does to your bank account. Warren Buffett is famous for saying that the most important financial principle of his life was the idea of compound interest. And the reason is because it enables exponential returns by simply staying the course and waiting for time to pass. But what's not often talked about is the power of compounding as it pertains, especially to your career. When I was 16 years old, I was desperate. Growing up poor, working at McDonald's, scraping gum under the tables. We were so poor that we got by on government cheese and food pantries from the church. I dropped out of high school so that I could escape poverty quickly and take care of my mother by getting a better paying job. I saw an ad in the newspaper that said college students would make $8 an hour, which was a huge leap from what I was doing at that time. I dropped out, got my GED, enrolled in college when I was 16. What I did not understand, I was also unleashing another force in the universe, and that is the power of compounding. By the time I was 26 years old, one decade, I went from making $3.75 an hour to becoming the press secretary to the mayor of New York and managing the response to the September 11th attacks. The reason why I was able to make so much success in a short period of time is because I pulled forward college by 2 full years. And that simple decision has played out professionally with exponential returns over the course of my life. I was able to start everything early. I ended up running 2 NFL teams before I was 40. I ended up on the set of Shark Tank as a guest shark alongside Mark Cuban and Kevin O'Leary. I ended up teaching at Harvard Business School, launching my own television show and my own production studio, owning a $1 billion portfolio of incredible consumer brands, and of course, writing this book, Burn the Boats. But it's all because I tapped into the power of compounding. You could do the same. And the way to do it is to always maintain a sense of urgency and always being intentional about your career. Our time here on Earth is limited. It's why Eliza says to Hamilton, "Why do you write like you're running out of time?" Because we're all running out of time. And then the second step is to always remain intentional so that when your choices are your own, the worst emotion in life is regret because it's entirely self-inflicted. So if you always act urgently and always act with intentionality, you will avail yourself to the power of compounding, not just in your bank account, but on your resume. And by the time you finish this journey, you'll look back and say, "Wow, how did I accomplish so much in such a short amount of time?" And that's because you ensured that you always kept your eye on the clock. The joy of life is in the striving, not the winning. If you've ever run a marathon, you're familiar with the post-marathon blues. When you're training for a marathon, all your energy is directed at this impossible goal, and you find yourself wondering why you're doing it, and you find yourself wanting to quit, and you find yourself running at 5 a.m. with chafing injuries and making it hard to balance everything going on in your life, and yet you push through in pursuit of this impossible goal that so few are able to accomplish. And then you run your race and you pull it off. And a few days later, you're depressed. Because it turns out that what you were pursuing was the ceiling of your own potential. You were actually in pursuit of finding out, can I do it? You weren't in pursuit of the medal. You were in pursuit of insight. And when that insight is realized and you have nothing to replace it, our lives feel empty. That is the dirty little secret of life. We're wired to believe that the goal is to win, to succeed, to get the recognition, the adulation, the money. But yet all those things always end up as hollow victories. And that's because the joy of life is the constant perpetual pursuit of the ceiling on your own potential, which at the end of the day is unknowable. So the true meaning of life, the true happiness in life comes through a growth mindset, a life of perpetual pursuit. But that's easier said than done. So how do you make sure that you're always constantly staying within a growth mindset? One, ask yourself, if you're working on something and if you were to succeed at it and it wouldn't cause you to update your biography, why are you even bothering? Two, are you comfortable? We need to see being uncomfortable as actually a feedback loop that growth is happening. But oftentimes we seek soothing, thinking that soothing is going to make us happier. A glass of wine to make the pain go away. But what we really want is that growth that only comes from being uncomfortable. So ask yourself, are you uncomfortable? And three, ask yourself the following question every single day. What is the highest and best use of my time, energy, and resources now? The reason why that question is so important is because we are the cumulative result of all of our past experiences. We are constantly changing. We are iterating. We are becoming more than we were the day before because each experience opens up new opportunities. The phrasing highest and best use is actually borrowed from a zoning context. It's premised on the simple idea that a piece of land should always be put to its highest and best use based on its current context. Think about it in terms of a warehouse in Chelsea in 1920. The best use of a warehouse at that time would have been for a slaughterhouse. Fast forward 100 years later, and the best use of a warehouse in Chelsea is condominium apartments for Taylor Swift and Leonardo DiCaprio. True story, by the way. So the same thought applies to you as an individual, you as an amalgam of incredible experiences that you've had throughout the course of your life. Every single day brings new opportunity because of what you did yesterday. And while some days the answer to that question will be the same as the day before, some weeks it'll be radically different. And it'll turn out there's something that you can do now that you could never do before because you now have both permission from the universe that your credentials enable you to do XYZ, but also because you have the experience and the confidence to do that very thing. So if you wish to maintain a perpetual growth mindset, ask yourself that simple question every single day. What is the best use of my time, energy, and resources now?
Thank you, Matt. That was Matt Higgins with 5 big ideas from Burn the Boats, a 7-day challenge to unleash your potential. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.